G'day world, it's Chris Hogan coming to you live from the Me Media studio for another episode of the Proactive Podcast. And today I have the pleasure of Mike Alkirk joining me, who's here to talk about cybersecurity and how to train your people and have your organization up to speed on actually how to avoid cybersecurity bungles. How are you, Mike?
Terrible. Thank you for asking. If anyone's wondering why my voice sounds like this, I was chatting to Chris just before. I either got a cold or I got bombed by a yogurt that was full of mold. So, but look, I'm great.
Okay, mate. Okay. So let's get into this. I think cybersecurity is absolutely out of control for individuals and organizations at the moment. And, my personal experience or my family's experience with cyber scams has been really average in the last few years. And albeit I thought that my experience and knowledge of the industry would have protected my entire family. However, I've seen firsthand that just because I know what's going on and what not to click on doesn't mean that my family does. And I should have been better at, I sort of blame myself as I do. And, you know, in my position at the office, you know, as a leader, I blame myself for not educating them. So essentially, you know, I think these discussions should be had more and these stories should be told a lot more so that people are aware of just how easy it is to be scammed and lose not only a lot of money, but potentially even identities and access to lots of critical and private information. So, Mike, I'm sure you got some horror stories. I'd love to hear them, just so that we can, not for amusement, but no, more for awareness.
Yeah, like I do have the horror stories. I've been doing this for about 7 years, and yeah, you do come across them. One of the clients I trained, here's an example of what can happen, because once a crim gets on your network, they're typically going to spread to other things and they get through different servers and computers. So one client that, you know,
are you able to speak up at all, please? Sorry, I know you're not well, but
how's that? Is that better?
Yes, okay. I think so, yeah.
Okay. Yeah, one client I trained, they a criminal got through all of their systems, like all their servers, multiple computers, and they had to rebuild their entire IT infrastructure. So, you know, the costs associated with that were just horrific. The downtime, that really hurt them. When I was training them, it was a bit of a kind of like a funeral, I guess you'd say, because, you know, I'm showing this stuff, saying, look, this is how the crims often get in, and they're just going, oh, man, why didn't I know that, you know? It was pretty bad.
So what's one of the most common ways for criminals to get access to systems?
Links are a really good one for them. And you see it a lot with emails. So they send emails. It's got a link in there. People click on it. They go to a dodgy website. Maybe they're tricked into giving away like login details or something. Or maybe they click on a link and that runs malicious software on their computer. Because, that's a thing, unfortunately. Websites can hack your computer. Depends, you know, maybe you've got some software on your computer trying to prevent that, but it often works quite well. So literally just clicking on a web page can get you hacked. People don't know this stuff. You know, so, and I see them.
A link comes in. Link comes into the email inbox, and it's, I don't know, it looks like it's from HR. Hey, we need you to update and change your password access to the server. You click on that thinking it's actually from internal, but they've actually masked in the name, they've potentially even masked like the actual email address that it came from.
They can do that. They can be blocked, but usually they try and get close.
Yeah, they get close and it's normally what is it? It's normally a spelling difference in domain names, isn't it?
Can subtle differences. Sometimes they don't bother because a lot of people don't even check that. And they just go, oh, what's this? And they use your emotions against you. So you see something like that, and you go, oh, no, fear factor. So they love fear and they love reward and urgency and, you know, pretending to be people. So they've got all their tactics which make people just freak out and do stuff without thinking. And they just go to the link, they click on it, they go to a dodgy web page, maybe click on something else. Like, you know, I always think, and I teach this stuff, and I've got examples where I go, hey, what about an unsubscribe link? You know, because people get emails and they go, well, I don't want this junk anymore. They click unsubscribe. And now they go to a website. They don't know where they are. And they just click, oh, are you sure? Okay, bang, that might get you hacked. You know, I'm teaching people, don't click unsubscribe. Why would you do that? You know? But even something as simple as that. And then you get targeted stuff. You know, like you're saying, HR scams, they do some research. Yeah, you can get in trouble with that stuff. And there's so many opportunities. There's so many ways that they could do this stuff. It's crazy. But the problem is people don't understand links. Because most people, I have a class that goes through this stuff, right? And it's like 40-odd minutes of understanding links. Most people, like a lot of people still don't even know you need to hover on a link to see where it's going, right? Mm. They just click on it because they read what they see and they go, oh, that's all right. Then they don't know
oftentimes the actual link is hidden by a click here and the link is going to a phishing, and the term is phishing websites, right? Websites that actually look just like a website that you're really used to going to. It's a carbon copy. They've copied all the logos, everything, every banner under the sun. It looks Mickey Mouse. For example, happens all the time with, you need to update your password now or you're going to be locked out of your bank account.
Yeah, that's classic phishing, yeah. They have to put in your money.
Put in your current password.
Yeah.
Obviously is the number one thing. And now put in your new password. Thank you very much. And now they've got access to your bank account. So the websites look exactly the same, don't they?
They often do, yeah. Or sometimes they just have an ugly hack at it and they just rely on, you know, sending out millions of emails of people just being gullible, which unfortunately is a thing. You know, a lot of people just don't think about this stuff. Yeah, it's pretty bad. But look, you were saying horror stories, you know, that's, and I mentioned the Crims getting into everything and rebuilding their systems. Like, I've seen all manner of stuff. I've seen someone who lost their identity and they spent 2 years trying to get it back, going through hell. It's not easy. There's a few services.
And where did that start? Where does that loss of identity start?
The Crims want your identifying information. So if they can maybe get, like, you know, and there was that Optus breach, right? So I got wrapped up in that where they got my driver's license. That's really important information. So if you don't change that, if Crims have got your identity information and you don't change it, it's probably just a matter of time before they use it. And then the more identity information they have, the more they can do to pretend to be you. And now suddenly maybe they can apply for credit in your name. So they take out a loan for 30 grand or something and it's in your name. So guess who's paying for it? It's you. You know, and you're sitting there going, I didn't do this. But the banks go and pay us the money back. You know, prove it's not you. Well, you know, welcome to 2 years of hell.
And this is actually hard. That's actually where our conversation started, didn't it? Because we've been connected for some time, and recently I was complaining about how ridiculous it was for me to, I was locked out of LinkedIn. I couldn't get back in unless I verified my personal ID. And in order to do that, I had to give my driver's license to a third party.
Yeah.
Third party, not even LinkedIn. I had to give it to a third party website. It was just going to store it securely and then provide LinkedIn with a token to say, yeah, he's all good.
Well, now they're asking for passports.
Yes, I know that too.
And so if you want that verified, forget that. No way. Why would you give, like you said, why would you give your passport to a company, a third party? You don't know them. You don't trust them. You don't know how they're going to store that information. You don't know what they're going to share it with, how they're going to protect it. Like, no way. It's just madness.
But I was like willing to let go of LinkedIn altogether. I was like, okay, personally, I don't care if I'm on there or not. I'm not giving that information up, right?
I think it's a matter of time before they force us to do it.
Well, so for me, they had me in a full Nelson, mate. You know, like I couldn't actually, I couldn't do anything because I've got clients, you know, company pages that we have access to that we, you know, post content on their behalf and we run their advertising on LinkedIn and all through my account. So if I don't have access, then we're not going to be able to do that. And
yeah,
potentially even those clients don't even know their access details. So sometimes, so all right. So like, this is actually getting somewhat concerning for me, especially I saw recently there was a report that said that AI can replicate my voice and my face speaking on video in a matter of minutes. And
correct.
And they've done that. They can do that already. Like, I've got hundreds of hours worth of video content on the internet, on YouTube.
Yeah.
That it would be so easy for someone to do that.
Absolutely.
So do you remember the movie Sneakers?
No.
Oh, right. With Robert Redford?
No.
Oh, mate, you've got to watch it. This is essential information, right? Because right. this was back in the 90s, and they were talking about voice IDs, and they stole this guy's voice ID. And, you know, my voice is my passport. Verify me was the words that they used.
Yeah.
And essentially, they recorded his voice, and they were able to hack into this huge facility. So. Yeah. There is places that are using voice IDs, and I guess that sort of begs the question, is that a secure method?
Not really. I think the whole biometric stuff, you know, like your fingerprint and your face and your voice, the problem with this stuff is you can't change it. So if it's being used, what do you do? Nothing, right? It's completely fixed. So I'm not a big fan of biometrics, really. Just going back to you talking about this stuff where they're using tech to mimic people, this is a really big thing now. So it's going to become massive because you use it and you got trust, right? You're pretending to be someone. And now people aren't even thinking about looking for the warning signs. You know, they're just straight in there and they're going, right, we're doing it. So this is something that I'm finding not hard to teach, but hard to get people to grasp. Because they go, oh, yeah, how do you spot AI? How do I spot a deep fake, which is using technology to pretend to be someone? And I'm going, don't bother, because you won't. Eventually, it's going to be so good that you just won't spot it. So I could be talking to you, and you could be completely computer-generated, and I wouldn't know. So then if you can't spot it, what do you have to do? And then this stuff and the insecurity awareness, I always try and keep things around simple rules. So I go, well, there are rules that cater for that. We already have them. So, for example, let's say my wife rings me up and the CRIM forges the phone number, because they can do that, and then they forge her voice. And they say, she says, I'm stuck in the supermarket checkout and I've lost the credit card. So can you give me the credit card details? So that's something that a CRIM can easily do, right? And I wouldn't know. But when you break it down, you come back to the rules are, unless you can touch that person, don't give out confidential information. You need to prove they are who they say they are. So I'm saying things like, well, call them back. Don't give it out. Call them back. It could be a deep fake. It's that simple. Or have a family password, you know. What's your family password? You know, tell them the password. Banana. Okay, cool. That's you. Otherwise, I'm calling you back. So the big problem here is, are people's brains in a space where they will do that? So for me, probably. Yeah. Even with me, who is like one of the most ultimate suspicious people and teaches stuff, I think I'd do it. I do. But what about, you know, people that don't do this for a living? No, they wouldn't do it. They're going to get tricked. And then you think about companies, like the big thing, one of the big things has been invoices, you know, fake invoices. So I've seen a company pay a $270,000 invoice. I had one client, the people that missed the training were finance. Guess what? They paid a fraudulent $18,000 invoice, and then they're ringing me up going, oh, we need another session. We had a couple of people miss and they got scammed. I was going, damn. But yeah, throw deep fakes into that now. So what if the CEO rings up someone in finance and says, hey, urgently transfer some money, just do it, you know, but you're speaking to a computer. So again, procedures, no, can't touch you, ringing you back, was that you? That stuff needs to be in there. It needs to be religious. You can't waver from it. But people will, because they're people. And it's going to take quite a bit to actually shift people's brains around this stuff and get them being consistent and thinking, you know, that little voice in your head that goes, not sure about that. You know, it's hard to, it takes a while to get that. So deep fakes, whoa, that's going to be
absolutely
messy.
You're bang on the money there. The text message went out last year to my mother saying, I've dropped my phone in the toilet. Please, I urgently need to pay this bill. She has access. She was then my bookkeeper, so she had access to all her company bank accounts, etc. Luckily, she didn't actually. Well, luckily, not. Anyway, she tried to call me back, but I was in a meeting, and I'd just spoken to her that morning, so I'm thinking, oh, okay, that this nothing can be wrong. Anyway, the phone kept ringing. It like call number four, and I'm like, hang on a second, okay, something's wrong here. I've got to pick up. But because I didn't answer that first and second time, she actually transferred the money, and it was $4,000, and that was, I don't know if that was actually recovered. I haven't followed up on that, but yeah, that was, that money was, you know, potentially lost.
That's common.
So yeah. And what you're saying there, like people, or what you said earlier about people reacting out of fear or, you know, an urgency, for example, that deep fake phone call, do it now, you know,
it works.
It has to be done right now. No questions asked. Just get it done. I've got to go.
If you can create that panic and you've really got the trust, it's so powerful.
That's right.
And people aren't ready for that. They don't know what's coming.
So the family password is actually brilliant. You know, we have one of those in my family, and we've had it for many, many years for basically the school pickup scenario.
Same. That's where our one started from. It was if someone turns up and they want to pick you up, what's the password? Otherwise, you run kicking and screaming.
Yes, exactly. Exactly. So we've had that for many years. I've got three daughters, so of course I was quite vigilant about that. Just in regards to, I think these other ways the scams are coming in. So they're coming in via text, they're coming in via email, they're coming via phone calls. And like you say, unless you can reach out and touch these people, or you have other measures and not these biometric measures, you know, like voice prints, eye scans and thumbprints and whatnot, that can't be changed, then essentially we need to have these other methods like passwords. And I mean, that seems so simple. And that people go, oh, surely that's not going to work. Like even I go, ah, come on, that's a bit fluffy, you know?
Yeah.
But I think it is so simple that it could just work, you know?
At the moment, passwords are going to disappear. Like there's already technology in place to get, like they're coming out with, my brain is a bit fuzzy this morning, but they're going to get rid of them anyway. But until they do, we still have them, right? And what people do, their password management is terrible. So people will often have really crappy passwords and then they'll reuse them across different sites. So if a crim gets your password, what do? They go into other things. And start taking over multiple parts of your life. And yeah, cool. Then we're getting into identity theft again. So good luck with that. So, you know, password manager. Use a password manager if you've got passwords. Let it create the passwords for you. Make them long, complex, unique. Use multi-factor, you know, so code on your phone or something. But then even that's often not enough, right? I'll give you an example. So last year, was it last year or the year before? Rabobank. You know Rabobank? So what a criminal did was they ran a Google ad. So, and they got, you know, some lady was looking up for her bank, the login. She did a search on Google and she saw the sponsored had. Well, that was from a criminal. So she clicked on it. Now, she didn't hover on it. If you look in your browser, bottom left, that's where you're going. It took her to Rabo Hank. So H instead of B. She went there. Like you said, exact copy. She logged in. And then what happens, the criminals now have her login, right? But she had multi-factor. Doesn't matter. The criminals log in to Rabo Bank. They're doing it in real time. So Rabo Bank sends a request to her phone. Here's the code. Put it in. She puts it into the fake website. It goes to the criminals. They put it into the real website. Now they're logged in as her. So again, coming back to, you know, links, people don't do links well. So you can have passwords, good passwords, multi-factor. You can still get scammed if you're not. I'm just saying there's a bit to know. You know, you got to bring it all together. You got to have these suspicion thoughts in your brain. You got to have simple rules. You got to know how to do things. And it's not hard, you know, but if you don't bring all that stuff together, you're just vulnerable. And then, you know, and we get all this human error stuff. Humans are the weakest link and stupid users. And it's like, eh, we're vulnerable, you know. So vulnerable people, you help them. So this is where we need to be. We need to be helping people just get better at this stuff. That's how I look at it. But yeah, look, it's messy.
So what do people do when they get scammed? What's the first, who's the first person or entity they reach out to?
Oh, usually someone like me, because you know you got that IT person in the family. So yeah. I do get that quite a lot. Where I get, sorry, I'm just my nose is a bit, just feeling a bit rough, as I mentioned. I've got a lot of friends, and they reach out to me as a first port of call because they know I used to do IT and I got the tech experience. So they ring out and go, oh, I've been hacked. People are using my account and they're sending messages to all my friends with a dodgy link. Okay, all right. You know, I'll report the fake profile and do stuff like that. If they're on your computer, though, if they've actually got on your computer, I mean, it's kind of like all gloves are off, because that suddenly gets very hard and very expensive. So for me, like, here's an example. Someone on LinkedIn, probably 6 months ago, I made a post and they said something that insinuating they hacked my computer. So, and I thought, well, that's pretty poor taste, isn't it? But I took it seriously and I start digging into it. Now I know what to look for. I'm looking at running processes and startup items, and registry entries, and I'm running software, and I fine tooth comb over this thing. And I'm like, no, I'm good. There's nothing in there. But most people can't do that. So if you think someone's on your computer, well, now you got to pay someone. Unless you've got, you know, an IT person that knows a bit of cybersecurity as well. It gets messy.
Yeah, sure. Yeah. Sure. So we have you on speed dial. Obviously, that's really great. Those that don't know you yet don't have you on speed dial.
I don't want you on speed dial.
You do. You want everyone on speed dial. So essentially, we would reach out to the organization, I imagine, that is telling us that, that, you know, like, for example, the bank, we would actually go to the bank now. Obviously, we wouldn't be calling back the number that called us.
No.
You know, but you said earlier that people can actually mask phone numbers. And just recently, I've seen an increase in people calling me back and saying, oh, you just called me.
So I had a missed call from your number. Yeah, so some cyber criminals are forging your number to call people.
How the hell are they doing that?
It's pretty easy.
Is it really?
Mm. Yeah, it sucks. So this is one of the things why I say don't annoy the crims as well, because let's say they ring you up and you have a real good crack at them and start swearing black and blue at them. They could choose to just forge your number for every call they make. And you're going to get a lot of, and then your number gets flagged in online databases as being spam, and it's not great. But yeah, it's pretty easy to do.
Far out. And so, yeah. I mean, why can't we fight this? Like, how is it that we can't find them? Like, I know, and I understand how, but I'd like you to explain, like, how are they hiding their location and all that sort of stuff?
Well, a lot of them are overseas, right? They're in countries where their government doesn't really care that much. You know, when they're doing their activity on the internet, they're hiding themselves. They mask. So you've got an address that connects it to the internet called an IP address, internet protocol address.
Everybody has that, right? Every computer that's connected to the internet, every device connected to the internet has an IP address.
Yeah. Look, a lot of the time they might just be sitting behind what's called a VPN, a virtual private network. So you can't really tell where they are. You know, they connect to somewhere else and it looks like they're coming from there. Or, yeah, they're in a country where their government just doesn't care. So that happens a lot of the time. Sometimes they get shut down, but they seem to operate quite successfully for a long time. It's just the way it is, you know, and you cut one head off and then another one pops up. There's not much we can do about it. I think, you know, it's jobs for these people. Yeah. It's an interesting thing because when you actually think about it, like, you know, a lot of people in, you know, different countries are doing it tough, like, you know, living off a dollar a day or whatever. So if they can get a job like this, will they sell their soul to do it? Yeah. Well, they don't care. They got to feed their kids, right? So they'll do whatever they can. Robbing from the rich to feed the poor. There's a bit of that. it's hard. I did have a chat once with a Crim. He had an honest chat. It could have been a bit fake, I guess. But, you know, he was saying, oh, yeah, just this, I just have to do this. This is the only job that I could get. And, you know, just got to try and make some money. We go, man, that sucks. Of course he wanted money, but I'm like, look, I'm not giving you money, but why do you do this? And yeah, had a bit of an honest chat. This sucks. It's terrible.
Wow. Yeah. So, I'm fully aware of professional organizations that are actually hacking networks and in countries that I will not name for sake of keeping it friendly, that have actual streets lined with them next to actual legitimate organizations in those same streets those countries are very popular and cities are very popular for providing great programmers and whatnot. So, I mean, yes, it's really sad that's the case. So, other ways that people can get access that we need to be aware of. For example, I remember that someone was in a public location, they were connected to a public Wi-Fi, and someone was able to get onto their machine through that same Wi-Fi network.
Look, there's so many ways we can get scammed based on people. So, look, if I work through it, I'd say files. So CRIMs get you a file, and then the extension would be maybe something like .exe. So, you know, you might be expecting a PDF, invoice.pdf, and you get invoice.exe. So there's that way. Then you've got links. You do have public Wi-Fi, so the criminals can actually get in there. They can sort of hack the Wi-Fi, and you end up talking to the internet through their computer. So that's called a man-in-the-middle attack, and they could potentially record stuff that way. Or they set up a Wi-Fi hotspot. I've done that. I've been in food courts, and I just turn on my phone, and I make the Wi-Fi name the same as the food court and put guest at the end. Now, I make it no password, and people start connecting to my phone. And I'm just going, if I'm a criminal, I'm putting some more stuff around this and trying to capture passwords and things like that. It's that easy. USB keys. So, and I've got one of them. It's just a little USB key. What they do is they're just a programmed keyboard. So, you know, a keyboard, right? It's a USB device. So can it be a little USB key. It can just be recognized as a keyboard, but it's pre-programmed to type. So people pick them up, and it could be a charging cable too, you know, because they're just a chip in there. You plug it in, and this thing starts typing, and you might not even see it. It might be just down the bottom left in that little search bar, and it's entering a command, a PowerShell thing, and suddenly, yeah, you're hacked and you don't even know it. So there's that. There's getting, tricking people to give out information or use bad information. You know, like they hack an email account and then they send an invoice and they've got their bank details in it. So then we come back to procedures. and you go to social media, people are terrible on social media because they click on stuff. They don't realize how much dodgy stuff is out there. So I show examples of this. I go, look at this post. Does that look all right? People go, yeah. I go, okay, that link there, let's have a look at it. Where does it take us? Oh, my God, look how much malicious software is waiting for you. So people, oh yep. God, I didn't know. There's so many ways. It's crazy.
Mm-hmm.
It's scary.
All right, so from a marketing point of view, this is a serious pain in the ass, right?
Yeah.
Because consumers are losing trust in all of the communications coming from legitimate organizations, putting out legitimate marketing messages with legitimate links.
Yeah.
And in emails, SMSs, and social. So if the consumer, well, I know the consumer is actually at the point where they're losing trust or have lost complete trust.
Yeah.
They are marking those messages as spam. They are basically just disengaging from that marketing communication.
Yeah.
And it's like, okay, well, right, well, where is this going? Like what are we going to be able to do? You know, as digital marketers.
Yep.
And I keep the digital stuff separate because there's a whole lot of other ways to reach people. This is just a downward, slide.
It's hard. Yeah, it's hard because there's people like me saying, excuse me, watch out for malicious links. And then marketing, as you know, often uses a third party to send stuff. And then
we've got shortened URLs as well. Yeah, like
you got short links. For example,
oh God.
Yeah, and they, I know. I teach people how to unshorten them. I say, look, just unshorten it. Go to unshorten.it, plug it in, and now you know, right? It's not that hard.
In a mobile sense, in an SMS sense, it says, like, for example, a lot of the SMSs we send out for organizations say, like, tap.this.
Yeah.
And then a unique link so that we can track whether or not they even opened it.
Of course, yeah, which right? is what you want. But then
we want to know that stuff.
Yeah, you do. But they probably, well, if I teach them, I'm going, you need to know where you're going. I do actually teach an example of marketing stuff, and I say, so I do actually cover this off because I don't want to completely annoy you. But I do say, look, marketing, often what happens is it comes from a third party and you will read the link and you will go, hey, that looks dodgy, but take your time because the key question here is, did you actually request that email or maybe were you expecting it and doesn't make sense? Like, you know, here you've got all these links. Can you find them on the website? Don't just throw it away. Marketing is a special case where you might need to dig into it. And once you go, oh, it's actually coming from that website for this company, well, now you know, and you can probably market as safe. So I do actually teach that. But, yeah, look, again, when you're really digging into links, you go, well, what the heck is that? That's not what I expected. Some companies exactly. try and do the marketing from their own website, you know, try and link it straight back. But then you're probably going to miss out on, you know, all the metrics and stuff.
Yeah, unless you're tracking you can't track those links. So
yeah.
So I think that's where SMS marketing especially is getting there. Like I just got an SMS from a friend's company this morning and I'm like, oh yeah, that's right. I remember, you know, why I would be getting this. Not that I have any reason to purchase these products.
Yeah.
And of course the site link is go-site.cc/, and he's put his company name in there, and then it's got ?1784, right?
Yeah.
And even if I no, it doesn't. And even if I click like hold down on that link, then it just says exactly the same thing. You're going to go to go-site.cc.
Yeah.
And it's like, well, probably not going to do that.
No, so there's
and
ways.
There's even the stop link, right? So that's another way to go, hey, bugger off, I don't want to get these anymore.
Yeah. You get all these redirects. So again, something I teach because people need to know this stuff. What you did there was cool, right? You held your finger on it, it pops up. Not many people know that. But then, you know, you'd copy the link and you go to a redirect service like wheregoes.com. paste it in and see where it ends up, and it'll show you the jumps, and you look at the one at the end and go, oh, okay, I'm cool with that. So now you know.
Far out. So there's an extra step. So it's almost, we need that app on our phone, if that exists. Is there an app for that? Or?
No, look, I've it's in my wish list of hopefully someone makes it one day. Like, the, you know, I want to see that if there's a short link on your computer and you hover on it, it does all that for you. It unshortens it, and then if there's a redirect, it works it out for you, and it might take a second or two, probably longer, but then eventually it tells you exactly where it's going. That would be fantastic, because otherwise it's manual.
It should actually be a default function on all devices, verify this link.
Yeah, I'm not a big fan of short links. Got to admit it, I hate damn things. Because people, I know what to do with them, but most people don't, and they don't. They don't deal with them. They just click on them, and then they get in trouble. But they are everywhere. We're stuck with them for the moment.
Oh, Mark, the interesting thing about that, probably people don't know outside of marketing, is that SMSs are limited by characters. So,
correct.
So you know, we've got to get it done, and I think it's 159 characters or something or other. Mm. And so if we've got even a web address, like sometimes web addresses are, well, most web addresses are longer than four characters. So we're already losing characters and losing the ability to write a message that people might even want to click on. So that's right. You're going to have to use the short link. All right. So, okay, SMS becoming more difficult. Email, we already know, is really quite difficult and on the decline. Has been for some time. We shouldn't be connecting to public networks because we don't know if they're real or not. What about just connecting to the internet through our own personal hotspot? Are we at any risk there?
No, look, not much. Not compared to using free Wi-Fi, because it's not it's not a honeypot, is it? You know, is someone going to try and hack your one little connection? And get one person's data when they could get it for 100.
Yeah. So, no. However, having your personal hotspot on all of the time and allowing everyone to be able to have access to it is a potential.
Wouldn't recommend that.
That's right. And a lot of people do have that. You know, we're all Mac here. Yeah. My whole family and company's Mac. So, are we better protected on Mac than PC?
Look, a lot of people will say, yeah, they're a bit harder to hack, but they can still be compromised. They're not bulletproof. I think the security's better on them, but again, you're not bulletproof. Everything's code, right? Who writes the code? People. Are people perfect? No. There's always vulnerabilities and little mistakes, and eventually the criminals find ways to do them. You know, there's some really smart people, they go, oh, we can hack your phone, we can get into it. And they've done it, you know. There was that case with the iPhone years ago, and what was it? I think a social media company, someone wanted a back door to a Mac phone, an iPhone, and Apple wouldn't give them the back door. So they paid a company in a particular country to hack it, and they hacked the phone and just got in. I'm sure it was hard, but it shows you nothing's really bulletproof. Nothing's impenetrable. But you're probably a bit safer.
Mm-hmm. All right. So I guess the biggest and most concerning hacks and cybersecurity risks that we're seeing is obviously access to private information and files and networks. And there's plenty of ransom where out there, people holding people to ransom, like you're not going to be able to get access to your machine unless you pay us this sort of money and things like that. What's your advice in those ransom situations?
Have backups. It's okay. The one thing that will save you. Like, and this is the problem. Like, when you do backups, there's lots of ways of doing them, and some of the acronyms like grandfather, father, son, and 3, 2, 1. So you'd need historical backups at like daily, weekly, monthly, And then you need three copies of backups and different media in different locations. And you know, once you've got your backups going, make sure that when your backups have finished running, get them unavailable from the internet, or, you know, make them disconnected. So even if someone was on your network, well, now they can't get in there and stuff them up, and test that you can restore them. So do you regularly have a look and say, I'm going to try and restore this chunk of files. Does it actually work? So if you're doing that, that's great, because if you get ransomware, you restore your backups and you're all good. The companies that get in trouble is maybe their backups aren't working, or maybe the crim got into their backups and stopped them from working. So, you know, I dealt with a company years ago, and I had a look at their backup setup, and it wasn't running. And it hadn't been running for probably like 4 months. And I'm going, and they weren't getting notified that it wasn't running because someone changed an IP address and the backup device couldn't email out. I was going, you've been without backups for like 4 months. So if they get ransomware, they're toast. So do we pay the ransom? Well, preferably not. You know, if you've got backups, of course you wouldn't. Do you pay the ransom if you ain't got backups? Well, it depends on whether you want a company or not. So, you know, there is talk about, we're not going to let you pay. The government's going to get, maybe. So we'll make it illegal to pay the ransom. What does that really mean? Yeah, there's always talk about this stuff. It comes in and out, and I don't know, maybe it gets legislated, but if you can't get your backups, you might lose your company. So of course people might want to pay it, and they might do it under the table as well. You know, might keep it on the sly.
Aha! So yeah. That's a great segue. So paying the ransom. Oftentimes, it's not just a well. In my experience, unfortunately, I have experience with this.
Oh, no.
They say, please pay us via Bitcoin.
Yeah.
Or, and then it's untraceable.
Yeah.
And then no criminal entity, no federal government, no police, nothing can help you.
Yeah.
Because they can't, it's gone into the ether, completely into the blockchain network that is untraceable to its origin and people, that source of the final destination for those funds is unknown.
Yeah. And then look, what's even worse than that, if you have been ransomed, they might come back and do it again because they already found a way in. But then what they often do is they might have downloaded your data. Because they've been on your network and they might just sell it on the dark web anyway.
Absolutely.
So you might pay the ransom and you might get your files back, or, you know, maybe you don't.
Hey, look.
I don't know. Or they sell it.
My evil self, you know, that lives in another parallel universe, got no money and no other way to earn that money, would absolutely take the ransom and sell the database.
Wow, you're right? So evil. I would never
doubling down. You got to think like this. You got to know that that's actually what they're going to do, right?
They do that. You're right. They go money, payday.
Payday.
Why not?
Double payday.
They don't care. So, yeah. And if it's valuable data, like if you get medical data or something like that, that's worth a lot of money. You know, you think of the value of data and credit cards compared to medical data are worth nothing. So, yeah, you can do a lot with that.
Really? Medical data is worth more?
Yeah, medical data. Full medical record is worth a lot of money on the dark web.
Why is that?
You can get prescriptions and drugs and stuff.
Ooh.
Pretend to be someone. All right. So, And you know what?
Oh, my Lord.
You know what they can get, now you can try and get someone else. So there's lots of reasons, but data is everything.
Right. So is it time to go back to stone and chisel? I mean, pen and paper.
No, it's not. It's not. I just tell you what it's time to do. It's for people to learn this stuff and keep themselves safe, right? Because for me, I do this day in, day out, and I am utterly comfortable right? I'm not worried about stuff. So someone sends me an email, I do my thing. I hover, I go, oh, don't know about that. I might have to unshorten it, might have to look for redirects. I'll check it out for malware. But even before then, I'm just looking at it going, well, I know this is a scam straight up because I'm suspicious. You know, I'm not plugging in USB keys. I'm not, invoices come to me. I ring them up and I check the details. I'm doing everything right because that's my job. It's not hard for people to learn this stuff. and if you keep, you keep doing it, you keep reminding them, they get good at it. That's all it takes.
I appreciate exactly what you said. It's not hard to learn, but I recognize just how busy everybody's life is and that this is not prioritized. And even when it is in organizations, the finance department doesn't turn up to the presentation and one person doesn't turn up to the presentation and therefore their awareness is shot. So absolutely, I believe the prevention is education and awareness and constantly staying up to date. So that's why I'm very grateful for people like you actually educating organizations about their cybersecurity and to, as you say, do not click on that. I think that's sound advice.
Can I just throw something in there? Something that I do, because most of my training is online, but I do like to go on site as well. For every single company that I go on site to, I take a USB key and I turn up and I say, oh, damn it, I forgot to print something. Can I get you to print something for me? I go, yeah, sure. And I go and get my USB key and I say, look, it's just on there. It's just a workshop overview. I just need that to guide me. I go, yeah, cool. Take it away. Plug it in, print it. And then we get to the section of the course where I talk about this stuff. And I show them a video of a computer getting hacked and how this thing's pretending to be a keyboard. And I'm going, hey, does this look familiar? Poor person is just cringing. And I'm just going, look, don't worry about it. This is why we're here, right? To learn. So it's okay that you didn't know that. But you get it now? And they're like, oh, my God. You know, that 2 minutes? You've kind of pretty much just knocked out the USB threat because people suddenly going, oh, my God, I'm never plugging in a strange USB ever again. So like I said, it's not hard to learn. It just needs good examples, good stories, and maybe actually giving them a real life example, you know? So that sort of stuff is just gold. It's cheeky, but it works.
That's fantastic. And I love it.
And I've never had a company not plug it in. Oof. Every single company I've gone on site to, they plug it in.
Mate, you just told everybody your trick on a podcast. Videoed, and it's going to be all over YouTube and LinkedIn and everything tomorrow. And let's see if they still do it.
Yeah,
and hopefully someone actually goes, I saw your video. I'm not taking.
Yeah,
that,
oh look, that would be amazing.
It would be.
Yeah,
well, Mike, thanks so much for your time, Mike Alcock. How do people get in touch with you? What's your best way?
I have a website. It's web safestaff.com.au. So my contact phone number is on there. I'm on LinkedIn. I'm a bit of a rash on LinkedIn, as you know, Chris. But yeah, probably through the website if they want to scare their staff, but in the nicest possible way. Turn yourself.
Look, I think you've got a solid purpose there, Mike, and I appreciate you constantly badgering people.
Yeah.
And on highlighting these issues and bringing in front of mind, it's a proactive approach for a lot of people to take note of what you're saying there. And hopefully you don't get hacked and tell everybody to do something that they shouldn't do and click on a link. So websafestaff.com.au. I would definitely encourage everybody to reach out to you and get educated, organizations and individuals. Hopefully this has enlightened some people as well.
Hopefully.
And they take more care.
It's good to
thank you so much for your time, Mike. I really appreciate it.
Thanks, Chris. Thanks for having me. Sorry I'm not quite 100%, but this was good. It's good to chat and just talk about awareness. That's my passion.
Great. Thanks very much.
Thanks.
Bye for now.
See ya.